This is Ottawa Now with Christy Cameron on News Talk 580 CFRA.
.307, welcome back. Earlier this year, when the federal government announced plans to create a national dental care program, people were wondering, what is that going to mean? Sure, it means that it's for your teeth and for your mouth, but how is it going to be delivered? What is the program going to look like? And you know, details have been very sparse. What we do know is that the federal health minister met with the Ontario Dental Association and the other provincial dental associations this week, and they're talking about how they're going to run this program, the CDCP, Canadian Dental Care Plan. Joining us right now, Dr. David Stevenson, a Carleton Place dentist and the former president of the Ontario Dental Association in 2018 and 2019. Hi, doctor. Welcome.
Thank you very much, Christy, for having me.
Still sounds, even though there was a meeting, like the details are pretty vague, that we still don't know how it's going to be administered, what services will be covered, or how it's going to work.
No, that's very true. The meeting was essentially, a meet and greet as such. The federal government, the Minister Duclos, he was looking for information on existing programs within the provinces. And all the provinces across the country, they all have different programs and they're administered differently. And so I think it was just an opportunity for the federal government to understand what's already in place before they try and implement or put in place their plans. That's good, but we'd like to know more and we'd like to have more input.
For example, like in Ontario, they'd be looking at some of the government dental programs, like the newer Ontario Seniors Dental Care Program, the government-funded one for older people, which provides routine dental services for low-income seniors. Then they're synthesizing the information about what that does and figuring out how it fits in?
I think that's probably the case. We have five different programs in Ontario that are run at the provincial level, and then there's two programs that are run nationally in Canada. And so, you know, we have a model on which to establish a new program. In Ontario, the federal or the provincial programs are woefully underfunded. So we know a lot of what's right, but we also know a lot of what's wrong with those programs. On a federal level, the non-insured health benefits and the interim federal health benefits for refugees, we have those programs as well. So we have models on which to base a new program. Again, depending on the province, will just depend on how it's implemented. And this is really important. I mean, I think the government, there is a responsibility that they have to let people know what's going to happen, let people know what's going to be covered, when it's going to happen. Because really, this is all about patients that need care. They need to get the care. And I'm already getting questions in my practice and across the province and across the country. The other dentists throughout the country are getting questions like, what does it involve? And I wish we had answers. But more than just answers, Christy, we need to be able to have input. The Ontario Dental Association has been doing this for a long time, and we're good at it, and we need to give input.
I don't want to paint the future as so incredibly grim when we're talking about birthing a new program for dental care in this country. But I can't help but feel a little bit concerned and skeptical given how our healthcare system is falling apart. I mean, look at the state of affairs. We've got people that have been waiting to get into the ER or having to get into the car and drive. There's a New Brunswick health region that has a pilot project to have a staff member monitoring patients in the waiting room after two people died waiting to receive care. It's pretty bad. It's really bad right now. In Ontario, they're trying all sorts of new methods to fix it, but it's a very big crisis. It's right across the country. What makes us think we can have an adequate dental program nationally when we can't even run our healthcare system?
I think that the big difference that should exist between the two, the healthcare system and dental care, is that speaking for Ontario, about 70% of the patients in Ontario have access to care, whether that be through private insurance or on the existing government-funded programs. But 30% don't. So if they can focus it, they can target their program and target their funds to the 30% that need the care, then I think we can have something that works. In all honesty, speaking as an individual dentist, do I want to be part of a program with extensive wait times, with you do not have the choice of care provider? No, I don't want to be part of that. And we have a model in Canada and in Ontario where dentistry is privately delivered and where 70% of the population has good access to care. But there is 30% that don't. And there are some existing government-funded dental programs in Ontario that cover about 5% of the population, but the rest of them, they need the care. Nobody should have to go to bed with a toothache. Let's make no mistake, Christy, this care is much needed. Any amount of money spent on caring for patients is money well spent. We just need to make sure that the right things are covered, the right people are targeted, and it's money well spent, and it's effective and efficient. And that's what the Ontario Dental Association really wants. The uncertainty that exists right now is causing some difficulties at the patient-doctor level. I have had a couple of patients that have implied that, you know, I'm going to hold off treatment. I don't want to get treatment until this program comes into place. Well, we know that it's only for 12-year-olds at the end of this year. Next year, it will be seniors and people with disabilities. And then in 2025 is when the rest of it is. So you can't wait. We've worked very hard to base our dental care on prevention of disease. Don't let small things become big things. Don't let big things become painful. And so we can't delay care, but we do have a responsibility to our patients to answer some questions. And the government has a responsibility to dentists as well to answer some questions.
Yeah. Now, listen, I don't want to politicize this with you because you are a doctor. You're concerned about the health of people's mouths. And I get that that is the priority I'm hearing. But at the same time, I'm just wondering if it seems like this is a bit rushed to you because you have the NDP leader, Jagmeet Singh, saying this has to be done. We've got to institute this by year's end. And that was part of the agreement between the NDP and the government. No room for error. It's got to be done. That is the deal that was made. Does it seem like the government is rushing the development of this to you?
It's a very short timeline, without a doubt. As to whether or not they're rushing it, if I was involved in the process, I could answer that question much better. But
are you concerned about the way the formulation of the system, the fact that the timeline is so tight and there's so much to work out here?
Yeah, I am concerned. And the Ontario Dental Association is concerned. The Canadian Dental Association is concerned. All the provincial dental associations are concerned that if to meet a timeline, they have an ineffective program, they have an improperly targeted program. I am certain that the government has the best of intentions. We all have the best of intentions for caring for patients. But, I think right now, if they could get on board and ask for the right expertise to help from the Canadian Dental Association, from all the provinces, and particularly as well, from my perspective, the Ontario Dental Association. Ontario Dental Association represents over 10,000 dentists in Ontario, and that's pretty much half the dentists of the country. So we have a lot of input to provide. We have a lot of data and analysis to provide from a historical perspective. We know what works. We know what doesn't work. And we have a lot of help to provide. And I think if they can get with that quickly and not make this just a bureaucratic exercise to meet a timeline, I think this is a tremendous opportunity. And I don't think we should forget that. I know what you mean, where you can tend to be pessimistic, and we are concerned. But at the same time, I do think we have to be optimistic and always be willing to put our best foot forward with this. And that goes for government, goes for the individual dentist, and it goes for the dental associations as well.
Really great to get your insight on this. Dr. Stevenson, thank you so much. We'll have you back.
Thank you very much, Christy.
Dr. David Stevenson, a Carleton Place dentist and a former Ontario Dental Association president. You know, this is the thing. I'm not trying to compare apples to oranges, but when you look at the state of affairs with our healthcare system, you just worry about the ability of governments to get our act together. Canadian dentists say that this is important. We've heard the perspective, but with the NDP and the Liberals having made this deal and the timeline being get something done by the end of this year, you don't want to rush things and do it improperly. and then it's a big mess to untangle later. There's already so many programs. As he was saying, you've got some subsidized programs in Ontario for seniors, for kids. So how do we weave it all in? How do we make sure that those programs are talking to each other, they're compatible, and we have the level of coverage that has been promised? Very few details on this so far. 317.
You're listening to Ottawa Now with Christy Cameron on News Talk 580 CFRA.
Welcome back. Big day at Ottawa City Hall, and you know your girl Christy Cameron was watching for the 2 p.m. deadline to see who would register and who wouldn't register for the upcoming municipal election. So it was an hour and 22 minutes ago. People who wanted to run had to go and register. We already had the news for you at the top of the show that Councillor Rick Chiarelli did not register to run for a new term in College Ward. There were a number of people that had already announced that they were running, including in Osgoode, the incumbent George DeRoos. We know Doug Thompson, who was a former city councillor for Osgoode Ward, wants to come back. He was also the town's mayor before amalgamation. He's registered to run in Osgoode. Bob Massaro, also in Osgoode. And Dan O'Brien, who joins me right now on the show. Hi, Dan.
Hi, how are you?
Good, how are you doing?
Very good. A little warm, though.
A little what?
Warm.
A little warm. It is a little warm. It's quite muggy here in the Byward Market. I guess it's a nice day out in Osgoode. You know, I never make the time to come out to Osgoode as much as I should, Dan. So I need to put that on my list.
That'd be great.
Tell me why you want to be on Ottawa City Council to represent your community.
Well, for my whole life, I've been a pretty keen observer of all levels of politics. And at this point, I actually have time that I could devote the proper amount of time to serve our community. And I did like the fact that we're not wearing a political stripe.
Yeah. How do you think it's been so far? You know, this term of council, when you look back and you see some of the divisions and the bickering and the clashes between Ottawa City Councillors. Is there anything we can learn from that for the next term of council that you took away from it?
I'm hoping that with a whole new, there's quite a large number of new councillors coming on. I think it's 9 for sure, and depending on a few others. And I'm hoping that with new bodies there that everybody will be able to get along and work together.
What are some of your personal top priorities?
The number one is probably housing and cutting some of the red tape for people so they'd be able to do stuff like a coach house or a laneway house or something like that on properties. Infill is something that is also has to be made easier to do.
Mm-hmm. And is that coming up at the doors for you? Have you been out canvassing?
It is. And I've been mainly doing rural areas so far. Well, our whole district is pretty much rural. But I ran into a case where someone had 0.9 of an acre and they were just shy of being able to put a coach house in and for their mother-in-law. And I just thought, you know, we're within a tenth of an acre. Surely there's a way that we could do that. Or the farmer that has a 300-acre piece of property and would like to take a small lot off for his son and not allowed to do it. So those are just things that I think we have to be able to work our way around it.
Yeah. How do you feel, especially being out in Osgoode, when one of the big heated topics has been whether or not we should pay for free transit, something that a lot of your would-be constituents, I assume, probably wouldn't be using?
It's not a very popular topic out here.
That's what I would think.
One constituent that I did talk to said they would be in favor of it as long as the service was equitable. In other words,
sure. So you can get out to Osgoode on the LRT or what?
Well, no, not on the LRT. Well, actually, we did have a railway track there. There's no reason why we couldn't have used it.
Sure.
But I think they were just thinking, as long as it's fair, they're good.
Right. But meaning that we have better bus service, that we improve OZ transport?
Well, did that take away some of the bus service in urban and put it in rural? But again, this was only one person. The vast majority are against having anything to do with it. But most people out here have one or two automobiles in their yards.
Sure. That's what I would have assumed.
Yeah.
Let's talk about the paramedic situation, because that must be very stressful for people living in Osgoode. The notion that we've hit so many level zero incidents, that has to be a main issue. What do we need to do about that?
I was, again, just talking with a constituent who is a retired nurse with the Air Force, and she was talking about Nova Scotia, and they have they're doing a pilot project down there. And they have a triage unit at each hospital. And when the ambulances come in, they are unloaded within 30 minutes. The triage unit includes nurses and doctors. And rather than sending the patient to an emergency department, they're sent to the department where they have to go. So if it's orthopedic or whatever it is, they go straight. But that would solve the whole problem. Because right now on the news last night, I noticed that they were at Queensway Carlton. There was six ambulances sitting there waiting. The longest one at that particular point was 3 hours and 20 minutes, I think. So that's ridiculous, having all of those resources just sitting there.
Mayor Jim Watson right now, who is not running again, so we will have a new mayor no matter what, as you know, was talking about the offload delays, and he's asked the province to fund an additional 42 paramedics. Would that help us out?
Well, it's not really going to help us if the hospitals are backlogged. Like the real issue is getting the patients offloaded from the ambulances. So I think it would be much more beneficial. I agree it's a step, but I think the right step is if we can somehow work with the province to get something like that triage unit that Nova Scotia is trying out.
What do you think about Doug Thompson, who used to be a municipal politician, looking to unseat the person who succeeded him, that he wants to come back? And he was the town's mayor before amalgamation.
Well, I think Doug and myself and Bob all are looking for, we're all looking for the same new job. So I wouldn't... I wouldn't really say anything positive or negative. And as I said, we're all working towards helping our community.
Just keeping it civil. Is there anything else you'd want to say to listeners if they're tuning in from Osgoode right now, making your appeal to them as to why you should be the person for the job?
Well, one thing I would really like to work for, and one of my key things, well, housing, of course, is number one. But natural gas available to all of our residents across the township, including the agricultural community. It's so necessary to get that done. That would be a second one. Community policing has come up again in my door-to-door, and how it's sadly missed in some of the communities where they're having some minor crimes going on, theft of vehicles and stuff like that. And they just think that if we did have a specific officer assigned to each community, that the officer would get to know where to look and who to talk to, and at the same time building liaisons with the local youth.
Do we have the money for that, though? This comes at a time when there have been a lot of critics and loud voices calling to take money away from the police budget.
I think if we just reassign some of the officers, that there's no reason why these same officers can't do regular traffic duty and policing at the same time in the general vicinity that they're the community that they're assigned to. So I don't see any benefit to defunding the police.
Dan O'Brien, good to get your perspective and to get to know a little bit more about you on the show today. Thanks very much.
Well, thank you very much for having me. Have a great
day. City Council hopeful for Osgoode, Dan O'Brien. He's running. Bob Massaro's running. George DeRuz, the incumbent, is running. And Doug Thompson, the former city councillor for Osgoode. We will continue our little profiles of these councillor candidates, and we'll continue with that on Monday. So if you're tuning in, as I said, from Osgood, we'll have more meet and greets to come right here on Ottawa Now.
You're listening to Ottawa Now with Christy Cameron on News Talk 580 CFRA.
There's a new trend emerging among workers across offices everywhere. It's called quiet quitting. What is it? I'd actually never heard of this term until today. And I am on TikTok. I don't post on TikTok, okay, people? But I do consume some of the content. Essentially, as this TikToker, who's called the Seamless Coach, is explaining, workers are no longer going above and beyond at their jobs for many different reasons. Some of them are personal. They just do what is expected enough to keep the job and the paycheck. They do not do any more. Take a listen.
What this essentially is referring to are people that start doing less and less, aka the bare minimum, because they are either tired, exhausted, burnt out, or here's my take on it. Many people show up to work very enthusiastic. They are very engaged. When this is never acknowledged by management, they are constantly being told what they are doing wrong instead of what they are doing right. They're never able to see the outcome of all the work that they put in on something. Requirements for these outcomes keep getting pushed and pushed and pushed. People don't want to do it anymore.
As they say, depending on the company where you work or what your career is, you know what the reward is for more work? More work. You put the hours in, you put the time in, you go above and beyond. Oh, well, look at you. Aren't you such a self-starter? Here you go. Here's another stack of work. Here's more clients because you've shown how innovative you are and you can just somehow handle more of a workload than Joe over there. So here you go. You take this other client and you can get it done because you seem to work at a record pace. So that is the case in some companies. And these people tired of going above and beyond and they feel like they're not getting recognition or reward have decided to embrace the trend of quiet quitting. I'm not going to answer my emails after 5 p.m. or 6 p.m. when I'm not on shift. I'm not going to think about work on the weekend. I'm going to have better work-life balance and it is what it is. I'm going to stay on the company's payroll, but I'm not trying to go above and beyond. I'd love to hear from you on that. That's our question of the day.
Question of the day on News Talk 580 CFRA.
What do you think of this? Quiet quitting? And are you doing it? Have you been starting to do it during the pandemic? This is how it emerged for a lot of people. They got exhausted. They were working from home. Some people felt like they weren't being recognized by their employer. And then some people said, you know what, actually being at home, I feel like I do have a better balance because I'm with my kids more. I'm not on the commute and I don't really want to give that up. So even if they're back in the office, they've decided just to start setting some firmer boundaries. The parameters of their day, the office is left at the office. I'm going to be blatant with you here. I don't see how feasible that this is. Because I think in a lot of jobs, you start phoning it in, that's how they'll see it. You're not meeting the expectation. The expectation is probably to go above and beyond. But let's see what Peter Cavan thinks. Peter Cavan is on the line right now, founder and career coach with Launched Careers. Hi, Peter.
Hi there. How are you?
Good. Good to get you on the show today. This
My
is
pleasure.
Really interesting. I had never heard about this before today. Is this a bigger trend that you're seeing emerge?
I don't know that it's a bigger trend. I think that it's trending. Does that make it a bigger trend? Not sure.
Love the way you actually articulated that. What do you think about this notion that people do the bare minimum or they do the expectation of the job, they don't do anymore?
Well, I mean, this has been a very difficult time for everybody through the COVID period and particularly for people who have been working from home. And yes, I believe that there are some organizations that are not as cognizant of the effort and contributions that their employees are making. However, I think that one needs to be very careful and thoughtful about, taking this approach, because it's not going to lead to the sorts of opportunities that are going to be present for those who do, in fact, go above and beyond.
Mm, right. You're probably not going to climb the corporate ladder or get the promotion if you're doing this, is what I was thinking.
I agree with you, absolutely. I mean, there will always be people who are prepared to go above and beyond. And those are the people who are going to get the recognition and the rewards. It's not important to an organization that you have a good work-life balance and that you spend time with your family and those other things that are part of work-life balance. They expect people to do a job and to do the job well, and the people who do the job best are going to be the people whose careers progress at a, you know, a more rapid rate. That's not to say that striving and establishing a good work-life balance is bad, but you just need to be cognizant of the implications of that.
Yeah. You should see, Peter, some of the text messages that I'm getting on this. It all of a sudden, the text board is going wild from listeners that are weighing in. Somebody here who clearly worked in the restaurant industry said, I'll never be concerned with someone else's food before my own family's ever again. Going above and beyond in the restaurant industry, just me, it really took a lot of time off of my life, and your salary never increases. So I'm hearing from people like that, who felt like they were being broken by their jobs. And then I got a really good thought that just came in here. This is quite thoughtful. This person says, I have no issues at all with the unplugging outside of the standard office hours, etc. That being said, I would be cautious with what is defined as not going above and beyond. That could easily slip into a slack-off attitude. I think as an employee, it's one thing to unplug, but you need to give your best during office hours and not be a doormat, but give it your honest best. What do you think of that? That's from CJ in Rideau Township.
Yeah, I agree, absolutely. I think it's not a matter of doing what's asked of you, but doing the best you can, which I think Steve was alluding to.
The other thing that's coming up here, this person says, what if you have a workplace that doesn't allow you to unplug outside of office hours? And a lot of people are in that position. This texter says maybe that's an indication it's not the best place to work. What do you think, Peter? Is that shifting? Because we live in a society where you do have your phone on, and often it's in the palm of your hand, and you're using it to socialize. Is it expected these days that you're checking email beyond 6 p.m.?
Well, if it is, you probably shouldn't be there.
Yeah. Is that something that you hear from people through your line of work?
Well, I think that, you know, what organizations need to do is to establish some, you know, principles and practices that say, you know, we don't expect you to respond to an email after 6 p.m. or whatever the number is, so that it's clear. But if the expectation and the norm in your organization is for people to get emails after 8 and the expectation is for them to respond after 8, then that's going to be problematic for the people who don't.
Peter Cavan, good to get your vantage point on this. Thanks for popping on the show.
My pleasure.
Peter Cavan, founder and career coach with Launched Careers. Wow, Danny, we are getting a lot of response on the text board.
Yeah, well, I think we've all been there with one job at some point, right?
Right.
Where we just check out and we're like, listen, I just need the paycheck.
Yep.
We'll just keep going.
I don't need to be the favorite. But I think there is a big difference. And I love that thoughtful text message from CJ in Rideau Township. It's one thing to say, yeah, I'm phoning it in. I'm not going to really do anything beyond what I have to do. But it's another thing to say, I'm going to show up every day. I'm going to do the job to the best of my ability. I'm doing it, but I'm not just going to take on extra projects.
No.
I'm not going to take on more clients. I'm not going to try and impress anybody because I'm just hired to do what I'm doing and I don't really care to go beyond that.
Yeah, you don't feel respected or appreciated by the company.
Yeah.
So it's just, you lose that oomph in yourself,
yeah.
Right?
The za-za-za.
The za-za-za.
Like when you lose the chemistry in a relationship.
Oh, well, that's it.
Zap.
Yeah.
I can't wait for Matt Scooby to come in here because I got something for him to try.
Yeah,
that's
we
next.
Do.
Maybe this will refresh your memory.
Flashback.
We were on a break!
Yo, tell you what I want, what I really, really want.
Yes!
I'll have what she's having.
Flashback Friday on News Talk 580 CFRA.
Yes, it is Flashback Friday, and we'll get to that in a moment. But first, my friend Matt Scooby.
You're always laughing at me. It's like, you don't even say anything yet, and you're already giggling
about
something.
Because you're wearing the baby hands on your index finger.
I came in, they were sitting here again, and it just like, yeah. I was like, you know,
I think we might just keep these in studio.
I think now we might have to. I
they're kind of satisfying
I think that
on.
It has to. It is. You know what? Like, when you put them on your fingers, and you're just like, yeah, okay.
Oh, Sam Pope loved them.
Yeah, they have a bit of give
Did
to
she?
Them.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Actually, Danny was stroking my face with them earlier today, and it actually felt kind of nice.
Yeah.
If you don't know what we're talking about, go to my Instagram. You really have to see it.
Yeah.
When I describe them as mini hands, it doesn't really make sense. Go to my Instagram, Christy Cameron on air, and then you can see them.
So everyone's face has been touched by these hands?
Yep.
Okay.
Mine was the last one. It kind of felt nice. Danny took them home because apparently they were stroking a cat.
Yeah.
She took them home last night, and then she sent me videos. She did her homework.
Yeah.
For
science.
A lot of stroking.
They didn't really like it.
No. At one point, Betty just put one in her mouth and tried to make away with it. And I was like, no, come back.
Because it looks like it's somebody's hand. Like
yeah. So I know who
will. Baby hand.
Who will eat a body.
Maybe we can use those for Halloween.
Maybe.
Yeah. We can dress those up.
My kid told me today he wants to be Taka, the fire monster from Moana.
Oh,
so,
that's nice.
Are you eating cucumbers?
Well, here's the thing. Trick or treat. Perfect segue.
Yeah.
I decided for the first time in 7 years of working at CFRA that I was going to use the community fridge, the upstairs fridge where people put their lunches.
Mm-hmm.
And so I went out yesterday and I bought a bunch of these mini cruncher cucumbers. Mini cucumbers. Well, not really, because today they are ruined. Everything was frozen in the fridge.
Oh.
There was barely anything in the fridge, and
that's
my cukes got frozen.
Oh, that's
now,
okay. You know what? I'm not upset about that at all.
You're not?
Cucumbers are gross.
Well, you think that's gross. Touch this. Touch my cucumber.
What is happening?
touch this. Touch this.
With it's, or without the baby hands?
Without. Take that off. Okay, no, feel this. So I knew that the texture was going to be compromised. It went from deliciously crisp yesterday, and I was dipping it in hummus. Now today...
How are you going to describe that?
You
going to
let me hold it?
Feel it. No.
How are you going to describe that?
Squeeze that. Right there.
This is getting worse.
Here,
worse by the minute.
Feel the texture.
I know, I felt it. Yeah.
Right there.
He touched the tip.
I did.
Here.
No, I don't need to touch it again.
Okay, but is that not disgusting?
Can you imagine this out of context
now
right now for people who are listening?
We're talking about cucumbers right now?
That is not, I am not eating that.
Because it got frozen and now it's unfrozen and that's what happens.
I have to throw away this beautiful batch.
I know. I'm sorry that you wasted. It's a waste
this
of money,
is food waste.
Which is too bad. But it's cucumbers, and cucumbers are gross.
Cucumbers are delicious.
I don't even like
no,
the
I'm
smell.
Not
I'm like, I don't like the smell of cucumbers.
See, I was kind of hoping that you were going to eat this. I wanted you to try this.
I wouldn't eat that if they were fresh and delicious.
Ugh.
Yeah.
Well, there goes the Foodie Friday.
Yeah. Well, it's Flashback Friday.
Okay, fine.
Not Foodie Friday.
You're not going to eat.
No.
Okay.
I wouldn't eat them if they were nice and fresh and delicious, apparently. Quote unquote.
I don't like them either. So.
Oh, see? You're outnumbered in here.
Man, I've been grossing everybody out with my cucumber eating in the studio.
No,
I was eating them yesterday.
No, I've always thought they were gross.
My diet is also based on like a toddler going to college.
Okay.
So. It's like pizza pockets.
It's Flashback Friday on the show. Today, we're going to talk about the most cringeworthy or... even your favorite retro fashion. Did you see that Mech Mountain Equipment Co-op is bringing back some of their old styles and their old outfits?
Everything that is old is new again.
Exactly.
All of the 90s fashion is all back.
Yeah, they're doing a retro line.
Yeah. Yep.
It's the Mech Anniversary Collection, and they're doing it up, and people are excited about it. So I was thinking back to some old fashions, and I was thinking about these pants, which I never wore. They were khakis. But if I ever got close enough to be even thinking about wearing khaki pants, it was because of this iconic Gap commercial where everybody was swing dancing.
Baby,
baby, it looks like it's gonna hail. Baby, baby, it looks like it's gonna hail. You better come inside, let me teach you how to jive and wheel. Oh, you better jump and jive and...
You drive in khakis, right?
You remember this,
yeah.
though, right?
I remember this.
It was the swing commercial. This is 1998.
I had some khakis.
I have khakis currently.
You still have khakis currently.
Oh,
it's fantastic.
Right. Yes. Khaki it up.
Yeah.
This was during the big band revival, so there was a big swing trend at the time.
Actually. I do remember that. I had some cassettes right before CDs became popular right in that
Neo
era.
Neo swing.
And yeah, I had some big band cassettes.
And this fueled the craze.
Yeah. So here's the thing. When I was looking for retro commercials for fashion, I could not find any or very few I could find that involved words because they were all mini music videos.
Okay, what'd you come up with? What else do we have?
What else do we have? Well, we have a famous Calvin Klein commercial.
Shouts goes out to my man Calvin Klein, good looking out for the drawers. Not saying I would do another Fruit of the Loom commercial or nothing like that, because they don't make the hype shorts. These are the 90s, man. They just fit good and they hold me snug. So if I'm about to go get some skins, I'm not
gonna... All right, that is Marky Mark back in the day.
Man, if you listen to that full commercial...
Yeah, there's some questionable moments in that commercial.
And even at the end, I feel a little violated. Like, he was very sexual.
It was very sexual.
Yeah.
Can we bring back Northern Getaway?
We can.
Because, this was... When you asked me about this today, I had, because we just asked, CTV Morning Live just did this, too, and I sent in pictures of, my brother and I in our Ninja Turtle helmets, bicycle helmets, along with the really bright colored windbreakers that we had in the track suits. But when you sent this to me, I was like, I want to bring back my Northern Getaway track suits.
Yeah,
my matching colored tops and bottoms that, whether you were at the cottage or otherwise. And that's my choice for bringing back retro fashion.
That was the place
fashion.
To shop.
Yeah, when you were a kid, 100%.
The shirt, the Spice Mice. That was meant to be the Spice Girls.
The Spice Girls.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
The play on everything.
I was big into that.
So good.
I can get into that. And then we also have this one for Victoria's Secret.
Oh. Could this be the world's most perfect bra?
Perfect. Victoria's Secret creates perfect silhouette. It's perfect.
Perfect.
A bra so smooth.
In case you didn't know, it's perfect.
That no matter what you're wearing, it looks like you're wearing nothing at all.
Oh. Perfect.
Perfect. Perfect freedom.
How many times do they say perfect in this ad? Perfect.
I know, right?
I'd love to be in the pitch room for this ad. Let's get a woman who is really sexy whispering the word perfect 47,000 times.
How would
perfect.
You?
Perfect. Nailed it.
You say it in your sexy voice.
What sexy
perfect.
Voice?
Come on.
What's the sexy voice?
You try. You could try to put on the
no,
sexy
voice. No, I'm not
voice
doing the sexy
come on,
voice.
Come
no,
on.
No.
And say perfect.
Oh, no,
here's the Levi's
come
ad.
On,
here's the Levi's ad.
I've got to run away. I've got to get away from the pain you drive into the heart of me.
Once I ran to you.
Now I run from you.
This is the love you've given.
I don't even know what's happening.
I don't remember this one.
So this one...
Are they drunk?
No. So this guy comes in an ambulance. He's in an ER and he's really badly beaten up, probably car crash. And they're trying to revive him. And
this is the ad for Levi's jeans?
Yes. I don't understand what jeans have to do with this.
It's inappropriate.
It is. And then he's just...
What?
Imagining the doctor singing with him. And I don't know what this has to do with jeans at all. But...
But there's singing involved.
What was going on in the 90s?
Yeah. Oh, man.
What was happening?
Lots of crazy, weird things.
Yeah. It was the hangover from the 80s.
But it's the best that it's all back now, though.
Yeah, it is pretty good.
Yeah.
I do like a flare jean, I'll tell you that much.
Yeah.
Might have a couple of those in the old wardrobe.
Flare jeans, yeah.
Perfect.
What?
Perfect.
Ah, she did it. My job
is done. That's not sexy. That's creepy.
Have a good weekend.
Bye.